Welcome to the Danger Close podcast, presented by Six Hour. My guest today is my friend, Ray Porter, narrator of all my audiobooks. And what a fantastic guy. You'll be able to tell that that we are buddies, and I could not have a better person narrating this series. Such a fantastic person. He did 20 years in Shakespearean theater. He was in Modern Family, Sons of Anarchy, Argo, ER, Almost Famous, and you will know him as Darkseid in the Snyder Cut of Justice League. So now, without further ado, Ray Porter. I get asked all the time about, every day, there's not a day that goes by when someone does not mention the audiobook and the narrator. Oh. And they're like, I love Ray Porter. Or they're like, who is that guy? He's fantastic. And I want, what else has he read? And like every single day that happens. And I get asked about your process quite a bit. And luckily we have talked and we know each other and we're friends, and I can answer somewhat, like you said.
I give you like permission to answer for me. Yes.
Thank you. I do that for yourself. I mean, everybody knows you and your voice. And if they don't know you yet, they know your voice. That happens quite a bit as well. They're so used, they feel like they know you and they know your name because they're so familiar with your voice. But then when someone brings it up, it's like, oh, that's who that is. Oh, you know what? I think I've listened to like 10 or 15 books that he's read.
This has been probably the most satisfying thing for me being an audiobook narrator, because I've always been an avid reader, voracious from the moment I could read. One of my favorite things in the world to do with friends is to be like, oh, you should try to read this book and just see what they do. But I really like reading your stuff because, as you may or may not know, I don't do a ton of research before I read the books. I like it to be immediate for the listener and for me. In general, there's an immediacy to it that I like. Your books, I'm like, I have no idea what's coming next. And awesome. And that's what's great.
You keep
coming up with stuff that's like so completely different. And I think the thing I appreciate the most about your books is there's no formula.
Thank you.
Thank you. You understand.
I do.
Certain series, it becomes almost predictable. And so as you're reading it, you're like, okay, so the baddie's going to come in here.
Yeah.
And this is going to be, and you don't have any of that. It's funny because your books, somebody asked me to describe your books and I said, speed, surprise, violence of action.
And I love it.
That's how you write.
I'm writing that down right now. Speed, surprise, violence of action. Ray Porter. Yes. And that is a blurb. Right. A Ray Porter blurb. I got it. Man. All right. We can cut this short.
But just kidding. Okay. See you later. Great talking to you. You and I both could probably name a long list of authors that, there's a formula and for better or for worse. But I do think it eventually runs out because it's not nutritious.
Interesting.
And so when you have authors who can shake it up in big ways and small, it continues to be engaging like the first time you discovered that author. And it's immensely satisfying. So I commend you, sir, because
that means the world to me.
It's been different every damn time with a few common threads that are delightful. And so when you come across them, you're like, there's people in your books that when they come back, you're like, oh yeah, I remember. Oh, I missed him.
That's awesome.
So it's good.
But the other side is that the character is going on a journey, and it's not just the same character each and every book. He's evolving, learning, adapting, growing, just like we all are. We're all on this journey. And so to just have the same person in a different, semi-different situation every book and just dropping that in, like you say, in a not very nutritious way long-term, that didn't really... That's not natural for me to do because I'm on a journey too. And I think we all are. So I think those two things, the feelings and emotions, and then that journey, having him not just be exactly the same character in every single book dealing with a different problem set, but doing that and evolving and learning and on this journey and questioning.
Yeah. I mean, I do not understand the first thing about being an operator in the sense that as I said, your former line of work. But I do know what it is to be confused. I do know what it is to be confronted with trauma. I do know, these are things that I can get next to. It's the humanity of it. And I think, for most people in bigger or smaller ways, there is the them before an event and the them after.
Yeah.
And how those two reconcile with each other is, I mean, it can create wonderful books, wonderful stories, and wonderful films. It can create a lot of sadness, and it can also create joy. But it's that big, there's those turning points.
No.
You know, a wonderful director that I worked with years and years ago, working on a Shakespeare play together, and he said, I will oftentimes go through a script and just look up the if onlys.
Hmm.
Find those points in the book where if only he had said or did Ooh. This, but he didn't. You can see those turning points then where you look at like, and there's that sense of loss of like, oh, if only he had said this to her. Yeah. If only he had been at this place at the appointed time. I mean, I can find them in your books, absolutely, all the way through.
Yeah.
For me, as a way in to the text, I spot those and I'm able to act accordingly, if you will. So as an audience member, I'm able to go into that world familiar. And it's not this sort of inaccessible alabaster figurine that I just get to stand off and appreciate. I mean, I get to walk in his shoes.
Yep.
And pick up a lot of interesting information along the way and learn about some killer gear.
No, I love when you text me and you're asking me about, what is this thing, tomahawk and this knife?
I know, but it's wonderful. And I think it's very thoughtful of you to include like sort of a catalog on your website.
Yes.
So you can go and see what these amazing, wonderful things are.
Exactly.
Owning a rifle is an awesome responsibility. Building rifles is no different. Started in a garage by a Marine veteran more than two decades ago, BCM, Bravo Company MFG, designs, engineers, and manufactures life-saving tools built to a professional standard. BCM builds professional-grade AR rifles and offers a huge and expanding line of upgraded accessories for the rifle, including buttstocks, pistol grips, optic mounts, handguards, vertical grips, and a lot more. BCM is partnered with veteran American Special Operations Forces instructors to ensure our customers have access to proven training to employ critical hard skills under stress. Every BCM product is a collaboration between our design, engineering team, and combat veteran end users. BCM components improve handling and reliability in all scenarios, addressing shortcomings discovered in real-world conditions with legacy systems. We assume that when a rifle leaves our shop, it could be used in a life-or-death situation. Each component is hand-assembled and tested by Americans in Heartland, Wisconsin. Bravo Company MFG is an employee-owned company. Visit us on the web at bravocompanymfg.com and on Instagram at bravocompanyusa.
So, going back to what I was saying earlier, yes, about being asked about you all the time, and people do ask about your process. And yes, so I answer for you, essentially, and say that everybody does it differently from my understanding. And yes, part of what you do is you want the reader, the listener, to experience it for the first time, the way you are, the way you would, yes, if you were sitting there reading it rather than having read it through the first time and have note for you having notes all over here. And
yes,
and so it's obviously the 10th time you've done it. To read it in a way that has that excitement and enthusiasm of experiencing it for the first time. So, and that's perfectly what I think expressed. You do so well, and why so many, other than the amazing voice and all the things that you can do, but that enthusiasm and that excitement and that magic and that heart that you lend to every project that you do. So it's fantastic.
My allegiance, I had a conversation with an audiobook narrator recently, and we were going through like her process, and because she had asked me some questions about like how I approach work and highly technical stuff, you know. Mm. But I said to her one point, you know, who are you reading this for? Who are you telling this story to? And she was like, well, you know, the listener. I said, but are you really?
Mm-hmm.
Because everything I hear you're doing right now is you want to make sure that it is up to the standard of what you perceive the publishers want, mm, or even the author wants or whatever. If you're not dedicating everything that you do, heart and soul, to the single mother who's got a 30-mile commute in the morning and her Chevy Neon or Dodge Neon or whatever, and she's listening to this on a CD, then what are you doing this for? Mm-hmm. Part of the reason for my process is you know, that wanting it to be immediate and wanting it to be a surprise and wanting there to be that sort of intangible first time feeling to reading it is so that the person who actually paid money for this book gets the most out of it. Mm. And for me, it is the best way of staying the hell out of the way of the text. You've heard my mailman analogy probably ad nauseum now, but the idea of I'm not an artist, I'm a craftsperson, basically at best. If I think in terms of my work as being a mailman, then I'm in the right slot for the kind of work I do. You have written a letter to the reader or to the listener. I broke it down one time in an interview where I said, look, if your mailman came around your house every day and knocked on the door and then opened his mailbag and pulled out a thing and said, this is from your mother, opened your mail, read it to you and told you how you should feel about it, that would be a bad and psychotic mailman. You know, typically, your postal carrier comes around and you don't even know that they've been.
Yeah.
Maybe you hear your mailbox, but you know, they're just there to deliver the correspondence from whoever wrote to you to you. If I approach my work in that same way, I find I'm in a better place and the book seems to work a lot better for people. I'm trying to stay out of your way. You're trying to tell these people a story. And if I do my craft to the best of my ability, your letter gets delivered.
Wow. And what else do you do to remember which character has which accent or voice intonation? Or do you have anything that you do? You put when you see the name, or how do you remember that so-and-so, if I haven't mentioned that they have a thick Russian accent in a few pages, how do you remember and not mess that up?
Well, sometimes I'll just make a choice based on what I'm reading about the character. And it seems sometimes I'm fortunate in that that's the correct sort of sound for them. Mm. Other times, not so much. It kind of depends. I see people's faces when I read the book. And when I see their face, there's really only one way that they could talk.
Wow.
So if it's a character that's been in the books before, I remember what they look like. And when I remember what they look like in my head, it's very weird. But if I remember what they look like in my head, I know what they sound like.
Wow.
You know, you did, however, pick the one dialect that's like one of the hardest for me, which is South African.
That a Rhodesian, I throw that in there. Rhodesian, you know, it's a little different, yes, exactly. Tiny bit different.
A little bit different, but important, yes. Because there will be somebody
people
who is Rhodesian who will be like, that wasn't right.
Exactly. You know, there you go.
I found the hack for that is to be sloppy with it. Seriously, though, nobody speaks. If someone speaks really precisely, it's uncanny valley time. It doesn't see, it doesn't register right.
Yeah.
If stuff is just sort of tossed off and words are flown over and that sort of thing, that's a natural way of speaking.
Yeah.
I remember once, I only know one phrase in Russian, and I happened to be standing near some Russian college students outside of a bar in Oregon.
Hey.
And they were talking in Russian. And at one point they looked over at me like I was eavesdropping or something.
Yeah.
And I said to them in Russian, the only phrase I know, which is, I don't understand Russian.
That's I thought you were going to say das vidanya at least. Come on.
No. I was just like, извините, я не понимаю по-русски.
Whoa, that's pretty good. That's next level.
Well, but the thing is, I was sloppy as hell with it.
Uh-huh.
And because I was sloppy as hell with it, the one kid looked at me and he's like, you have no accent when you say, you know, and it was like, yeah, of course I don't, because people on the street aren't that attentive to the ends of words and the way this consonant, it's just street talk. So if you're casual with a dialect, it will be more convincing than if you work on the precision of it.
Got it.
It sounds stilted if you're like being super, super precise. So I'm sloppy as hell with dialects and they ultimately end up sounding a lot more accurate.
Wow.
But no, you know, and you do learn to play. I mean, I do it all the time. Like you probably heard it in your book where I ignore a period, the end of a sentence. I won't pause. I'll just drive on through into the next one, you know, and it's been hard explaining it to editors where they're like, yeah, but there's a period there. And I'm like, I know, but the needs of the scene in that moment. Yeah, but there's a period there. Yeah, but there's the, you know, and trying to get that across.
It sounds like they'd be best served to just let you do your thing at this point. Like, here you go.
Well, no, and I prefer supervision. I really do. But I take any opportunity to defend my choices with a piece of text as valuable learning stuff, because I'm probably not right, you know? And if I am, great, but I might not be. And, you know, it's a chance to learn. So yeah, you know, it's you kind of play fast and loose with certain bits of punctuation. There are some books that seem almost written to be spoken. And there are others that are written to be read. And that's a very, very different sort of, it's a very different thing.
Yeah,
you know, visually, looking at the way a sentence is constructed and that kind of thing, like the stuff that it hits in your mind, you know, can be wonderful and delicious and great. Try speaking it.
Got it.
You know,
yeah.
There are some writers, not you, but there are some writers who stylistically, they'll have a sentence that goes and goes and goes and goes to the point where you feel like you need gills, you know, just to keep breath in your body while you're reading it out loud.
Yeah.
You know? So you have to choose, like, when can I take a break for breath without it becoming a dramatic pause when it shouldn't be, you know, stuff like just a million different little tiny things.
Yeah.
So it varies wildly. So when people ask me, you know, how long does it take you to finish a book? It's like, depends on how long the book wants me there. You know, there's some books that you're going to be there for a while.
Yeah.
And there are others that the story just gets told.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to let you get back to it. And
all right, my friend.
Thank you so much for doing this, for narrating the books, for bringing a whole other fan base. I think that my future, my station in life, everything that's happened would be quite a bit different if you had not narrated these books. So I can't ever repay that. And
brother,
I sincerely appreciate
my absolute privilege.
Thank you so much. Take care, and we'll hopefully I'll see you soon.